What's your go-to pizza flavor?
You know, I like it just no toppings. You know,
just the cheese.
Yeah, I'll take the latter. Not freaking happening.
I remember thinking, like, damn, it's harder to be a head coach.
I for sure started it. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Like, I don't remember what I said.
I think for me, you know, and if I ever wrote a book, doubt if I will, but if I did, I think it would be a good one. I would call it the scoreboard life. You know, spicy tuna?
Yeah.
You know, like when you think of spicy tuna on the sushi deal?
Yeah, okay.
That would be a Swedish fish wrapped around a hot tamale.
Okay.
I mean, two standing in the at half court with it, took his jersey off. He's just like running around. I mean, it was just madness in the whole place. And then, you know, I went through and
we'll stop right there. Yeah. Talking to you, and you know your passion for Xavier basketball is something that motivates me. I'm Sean Miller, head basketball coach at Xavier University. Basketball has always been a part of my life. It's a game that means a lot to me. It's given me friendships and relationships that I'll carry with me forever. But basketball's also given me many stories, and those stories are something I'm excited to explore. Welcome to the Sean Miller Podcast.
Coach, I think one of the things about college basketball that I've learned from you is, it's so much a results-based business. You talk all the time about the scoreboard never lies. It tells you, it gives you reality. You know exactly how you did when you look at it after a game. But when the results aren't always there necessarily, like you're 8-8, Are you pulling from previous seasons where maybe things didn't always go your way? I think with college basketball, you look at your record as a whole. You've had a lot of really good seasons where maybe wins were easier to come by than losses. So how do you sort of navigate when the results aren't always there? Do you look back at your career at some of those seasons that were maybe more difficult?
Well, you know, right now I'm a lot different than I once was. I think all coaches evolve. Think about you guys, like where you'll be a decade from now or maybe who you are today versus even 4 or 5 years ago. You know, you grow within your industry, and I think you just sometimes you become smarter through mistakes and just things that you wish you could have done better. But as you know it now, when those opportunities present themselves as your path grows and moves forward, you have the opportunity to actually do it a different way. I think for me, you know, and if I ever wrote a book, doubt if I will, but if I did, I think it would be a good one.
I would call it
the scoreboard life, because or something like that. Because if everybody in the sales world, whether you're the CEO or you're in the trenches, you know, just actually as that salesperson, was publicly judged on what happened in their last presentation. Like, in other words, did you win or lose? It was that black or white. That profession would be looked upon much differently, you know, because the thing about sports, to your point, Adam, it's so public that you can allow it to become personal. So I think the one thing that I have learned, not saying that I always can do it, but I really try to communicate this as much as I can to our staff, to our players, to my own family and myself, is it's so much about what you do between games, how you communicate, how you go about your business, how you fix problems, you know, how you grow and build on things that are going well, and seeing things in a clear lens, not being misguided by so much of the external things that really become a part of college sports. It's why college sports is so awesome. People care. But to the detriment of it, if things aren't going well, it could really, you can go off the rails. And I think sometimes from an emotional perspective, you know, you feel like dying because you lost the game. And look, losing is really difficult, especially on a coach and the staff. But you have to be able to accept it, learn from it, grow. And then it's like we did it from the UConn game. As difficult as it is to lose a home game in the CentOS Center, even to a terrific team like UConn, it was so much about us being able to learn from it, leave it, and then get ready for our next challenge, which is at Providence. No easy task. We now face the reality of things went well at Providence, and we have an equally quick turnaround. Can we learn from the things we didn't do well in that big win, build on the things we did, and be the best that we can be in our next game against Butler, who's a very good team? So to answer your question of what have you learned over time, I mean, it's a little bit like today's NFL. It's those organizations that just seem to be able to deal with the injury that happened last Sunday, the tough loss, the big win, the travel that everyone has to do or accept. And then that next Sunday, can you become the most ready and best you can be? Because it's just like parity. In week 17, you have half of the league in the NFL trying to make the playoffs. It's amazing. What separates the NFL is a game, two games, one injury. You know, a team that maybe wasn't as ready. And I think in this year's Big East Conference, because it's so good and the parity exists at such a high level, that the difference between finishing in third place and seventh, you know, I didn't say 11th and first or 10th and second, but the difference between seventh and second is about five plays, one game, two games. So as we're in that, the details matter, and what we do between one contest and the next, not getting too high, not getting too low, seeing it as a true process. I think that not only helps develop the team that we're currently coaching, but more important here at Xavier is to build the program, to continue to move forward and grow something, build it. I use the word grow a lot. You know, you could replace that with build. You know, just constantly trying to be better than you once were. And here, look, the bar is pretty high. There's been some great teams and programs. We have sustained excellence here for so long that what do I mean by building the program? Well, in today's Big East, can you be a perennial, can you be a year-in, year-out team that can vie for those top spots? I mean, that would be an amazing accomplishment, but that's a huge challenge. So that's what we're building towards.
Start to finish, I thought that was a really fun game. And I found myself thinking, like, do you have fun during games? Or is it more like, are you just stressed out thinking about all the little things that go into trying to win a college basketball game?
I'll answer this the same way that I answer this when my wife asks me the exact same question. And she doesn't always ask it about the game. She's like, do you ever have fun? Are you, you know, can you smile, et cetera? And look, I don't have to like do cartwheels and you know, guzzle a Miller Lite to say, hey, I'm having a time of my life. You know, nobody enjoys watching us play well more than me. Trust me on that. But sometimes I think when you're in the game, you know, you want to focus it all the way to the final buzzer, making sure that you realize, look, you're in charge of 18 to 22 year olds. And, you know, just them being able to see this for what it is. We want to play to the final buzzer, whether we're winning or losing. You know, that again, back to what we talked about here a few minutes ago. And then when the game ends, then you really can take a deep breath and enjoy a lot of the hard work. But, you know, I told the team after the game, you know, at Providence, I'm not relieved at all. Like, oh, I'm relieved we won. That's not the way to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thrilled. I'm so happy. And because when you see a staff work together closely with the group of players and you watch a lot of young players team grow, a guy like Trey Green, who's had some tough moments this year. I've coached him hard. You know, we're on him constantly to improve as a defensive player. And to watch him break out on the road at Providence and play the way he did, there's no better feeling as a coach than seeing that happen right before your eyes. So the plane ride home, the pizza, it tastes so much better. The flight, it doesn't matter if you're in the air for 6 hours or 15 minutes, it just feels like, ah. Oh. And that's when you can sometimes say, you know, I love this. You lose, it's the opposite. It's like that self-talk of next thing, we're gonna be fine. It's not the end of the world. The sun's going to come up, and then it's back to that process. So I try to somewhat stay in between those points. I have never had a problem of handling the emotions with a great win. Like, God, look at him. He's lost his mind. He's so happy. I'm not that. I could certainly go off the deep end with a tough loss. So I'm always pulling it back from the tough loss and trying to enjoy the big win, or I'll win more. But, yeah, I guess it's just you have to be yourself, right?
You do. Yeah.
What's your go-to pizza flavor?
You know, I like it just no toppings, you know?
Just the cheese?
Yeah. I think that's the true indicator of how good the pizza is.
That's a good point.
There's a pizza place where I grew up. My wife did as well in Beaver Falls. It's called D&G Pizza. I think it's America's best pizza. Comes in a white box, square cut. It's hard to explain it. I get it mailed to me all the time. When I was at Arizona, people would send it to me. Here in Cincinnati, it's easier. So I love it. I love it. I'll put it up against any pizza in the world. So.
All right. You've given us something to think.
Let's do a taste test on the pod.
Yeah,
sometime.
We might need to try this.
I tell you what. We're going to do it on this podcast.
All right.
And I'm going to let you guys try it. You could compare it to some of the best pizza you've ever eaten. All right. Okay. See what you think. All right?
Yeah. All right.
That was a surreal moment for me,
I think,
me
if
too.
Anybody was equipped to beat Butler that year, it would have been us. Because we had, just because they were obviously really talented with Gordon and Matt Howard, all those guys. But just with the way that the game ended at their place.
How'd that game end, Kenny?
So let me rewind. Okay. So the first time that Butler-Xavier game was played, Brad Stevens being the coach, and we played him here at CentOS. That would have been Kenny's freshman year, and that would have been my last year here the first time around.
I remember.
And we were good. Obviously, we got to the Sweet 16 and almost won 30 games. They were understated. Mm-hmm. You know, Gordon Hayward was playing, Matt Howard, and Shelvin Mack. The world of college basketball didn't truly know who they were. Quite frankly, they didn't know who Brad Stevens was at that point.
Right.
But I'll never forget this. One of the rare times coming off the court at halftime that I heard a resounding level of boos from the CentOS crowd.
Because of Matt Howard. He had like 100 offensive rebounds.
Yeah, we were down. We were down probably double digits.
Yeah.
And Matt Howard, this guy didn't look the part, right? Floppy red hair just in there. Nobody could block him out. They were running us around, but we were down double digits and it looked like we weren't trying. I would beg to differ, we were. Right. They were just really good.
Yeah.
But I remember getting to the locker room and telling you guys, you probably remember it. They're booing you, they're booing us. They're booing, we're all in this together. They should be booing us, right? Mm-hmm. You're letting these guys and no one goes. And I looked at Derrick Brown, I said, Gordon Hayward, I don't even know, where's he from? Like, who is this guy? Yeah. I mean, you're making him look like an NBA first round pick, Derrick Brown. Like, what's up? Are you gonna try the second half? I mean, whoa. And Derrick and I've actually talked about it many times. Yeah. He remembers like, Gordon Hayward, he's pretty good. He was pretty good. But they came out, they beat us. Mm-hmm. And they beat us really from start to finish in that game. So I left and I was at Arizona and I knew that the return game was at Butler. So go ahead.
Well, just real quick, one of the things that sticks out in my mind about that game is that Matt Howard got his own rebound when he was shooting free throws twice in that game.
Yeah.
And I remember it like it was yesterday because of just the film session after the game was. I mean, because we used to have to run up downs for every time we didn't block out, all that stuff. And that day it was like, for a half hour after practice, everybody's got like 50 up downs. Like it was nuts. But so the second game happens and, you know, it gets down to the very end. I remember diving on the floor and grabbing a ball, and ball slipped out of my hand, something. I can't remember exactly what happened, but Gordon gets the ball and lays it up. And then all of a sudden they're going to the monitor. And it's like, well, there's 3.8 seconds left. And we're like, okay, well, so obviously we're going to get 3.8 seconds. The refs go stare at the monitor and they're just, I mean, it seemed like 20 minutes they were looking at it. All of a sudden comes out, the guy says, game over, and just runs off the court. And we're like, what do you mean? He was like, well, it was exactly 3.8 seconds that they had stopped the clock. So we're just taking the rest of the time off, game over. The ref just ran off the floor. And we're like, I mean, two standing at half court took his jersey off. He's just like running around. I mean, it was just madness in the whole place. And then, you know, I went through and.
We'll stop right there.
Yeah, that's good. That's
There's
good.
More to that fine. Story.
Your hydration levels we'll took a hit after
we'll
the game.
I'm sure that story will come out somewhere, but it's not like people don't know about it. No, I'll never forget the look. I feel bad now. At the time, I didn't feel bad at all. But just like, I can still see the manager's from Butler, like plugging up the hole on the wall with like towels and Mario. And I mean, you know, Mario is just the way he talks. He's just, I can't swear on here, but the way that Mario talks, he's just like, Jesus, guys. And, but that was, what a crazy game.
I got a couple questions for you. My first question is, what is it that stands out the most when you think about your final year in college at Xavier? Because I know it goes by fast, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely, it felt like it was like just a couple months ago. Like, it felt like it was just the other day. But what I think about the most is just like the winning culture that we have. I feel like just in that little time, I feel like we just won so many games. And, like, I ain't never been on a team that good with that many good players and good coaches. And I feel like we just won a lot of games, big games. And I feel like we did what we were supposed to.
Yeah.
I feel like we could have went further for sure if stuff played out a little differently. But the fact that we made it to the Sweet 16 and got to the tournament and won so many games and went on the road, beat very good teams, is just, that's what I remember the most. Like, I'm gonna always remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think when you go 15-5 and finish in second place behind Marquette and in the regular season,
17-3, that could be.
That's right. Could easily, no question. Yeah. We were right there. But and then even in the Big East tournament, you know, and then the non-conference schedule. I mean, you think about going to Portland and playing Florida, and then playing Duke, and then playing Gonzaga, three games in 4 days. No doubt about it. But it was a very rewarding season. And, you know, the thing that stands out for me answering my own question is we had so many guys that were hungry to have a great season, mm-hmm. simply because all of you guys had touched success both individually and almost as a team in other places, but you never really put it together completely. And, you know, you could feel the power of that, you know, in our locker room, in our practices, that everybody was so hungry to be in a tournament, to make the tournament and to advance. And it was fun to kind of be in it together like we all were.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
We had a lot of seasoned veteran guys. I've been in college 4-5+ years, AK, Nunji. We was a seasoned group. And we all came together. That was the beauty of it.
Yeah. So the other question I had is, you know, we're right in the thick of the Big East right now. And I mean, Sule, you could talk about the Big East Conference to other people, but the physicality, how it feels to play on the road, the Big East tournament. And, you know, we described it as best we could when we recruited you. But, you know, if you were to tell a younger player or somebody about the Big East Conference, mm-hmm. how would you describe it? What stands out for you when you think back to playing in this league?
I would say definitely tough, gritty, grimy, hostile environments. It's a lot, man. It's one of the best conferences for sure. It still is. I mean, a lot of great coaches in there. It's just one of the best conferences. I mean,
yeah, nothing easy.
Yeah, it's nothing easy. You not having no easy game, no off night. You going to play Butler. We went in Butler last year. We didn't go in there with our minds right. They smacked us. They were so happy to play us. Like,
yeah.
It ain't you're not walking over nobody. DePaul, like, ain't no easy games. There's no easy games. Everybody talented. They might have a below 500 record, but no team is less talented than others. Everybody is good. Everybody has great talent. There's a lot of great coaches as well. So,
yeah.
Something I was curious about, and I think whether you're being recruited out of high school or whether you're being recruited in the transfer portal, you know, on one hand, like Sean and his staff, they're evaluating you, Sule, but on the other hand, you're evaluating them. And what do you remember about the first impression that Sean and Xavier made on you?
They had no point guard. And I wanted to be able to play the point guard, you know.
This is so transactional. You see, you thought he was going to say coach's personality, CentOS Center, East Conference. I had minutes. I had 34 minutes looking at me in the face. See, it's a reminder. It's just a reminder. But no, we did have such a great opportunity for him, for sure.
Nah, I just felt like it was just the best of both worlds. I mean, coach, no, I mean, it was a lot of minutes to be a lot of minutes up for grabs. They had a lot of good key pieces. Desensitized. I ain't even had to get sold on that. And playing for Coach Miller. He's known for coaching a lot of good guards and letting his guards play and playing fast. I wanted to play fast. That was my type of game. So that's what I wanted to do. I feel like it was just the best of both worlds. It was just the perfect situation. I feel like it just God put that out there for me for a reason. So it was just, I don't know, I was lucky, to be honest. Like it was a perfect match.
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
Milano, Italy.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Abuja, Nigeria.
And
I chose Xavier University.
For its education.
More opportunities.
For passion.
Because it felt like home.
The community.
Campus life.
D1 basketball.
Because I love Cincinnati.
I came here
to be a Musketeer.
I am.
I am.
I am.
And we
are the faces of Xavier.
The Sean Miller Podcast is proud to partner with Deer Park Roofing, a company that's provided elite service for homes and businesses since 1996 and leads the industry in professionalism, quality, and responsiveness. Whether your needs are residential or commercial, like the outstanding work on the Cintas Center, the home of Xavier Basketball, Deer Park can handle any job and ensure it's done right. Deer Park's motto is protect what's important, and what's important to you is important to Deer Park Roofing. Visit DeerParkRoofing.com.
Welcome back here to the Sean Miller Podcast. We appreciate everyone joining us. You touched on Dalen's background, and I'm curious, you know, you're a high school kid, you're from Phoenix. What's it like when, you know, you get the call from Sean Miller, he knocks on your door and he wants you to come to Arizona? What was that process like?
Honestly, it was very crazy because I'm just being a Phoenix kid, you know, you look at Arizona like the Duke of the West Coast. So I always watched a lot of Arizona basketball. When we being from Phoenix, obviously I seen ASU, but I really was like, no, U of A is, that's where I want to go, blah, blah, blah. So it was always my dream school, but it was weird because I was getting a whole bunch of offers, but I never talked to Sean. So I was like, man, it's bullshit. Like, that's what I'm like, I'm waiting for him to call me. So it was crazy because like everybody was like, man, they want to talk to you, but they just haven't talked to you yet. And I'm just like, all right, like tell them, come on, like I'm ready, like, you know what I mean? So it was, I had to fight myself with that, like just not jumping too early when he said, I want you to come, you know? Cause it was like, I didn't want to fall in love with me being his kid. I had to think about like my basketball career, like, all right, how much does he want me? Where am I going to fit in and all that? So when he finally started recruiting me, it was weird because at first it was the assistant coaches. And you know, they say like, go where you're loved at. So like some schools was having the head coach call me, but I didn't talk to Sean yet. So I remember I was, who was the coach? Justin Ganey was calling me a lot. And I was just like, man, it's not Sean. I don't really care. Like, he can tell me whatever he says. It's not Sean. I don't care. That's who I seen coach all these games. It was not Sean. So as soon as you called me, I was like, all right, bet. I remember calling Ray and Ato, like, man, I think I want to go. He's like, not too early, not too early, not too early. And it was me, like the first call you had. And they was telling me, chill out. But the one thing I could say about his staff and how he recruited me was when they started. Like it was not, some schools will recruit you a little bit and then fall off if you have a bad game. No, it was like, no, we want you, and this is how we're going to use you, and I promise you, like, this is how much we want you, like. And they would blow my phone up, like, Coach Murph called my phone every day. And I was like, bro, stop calling my phone. It was like, it was to that point, D-Mill would call me all the time, and I was just like, bro, I'm getting irritated how much they're calling me. So I was like, you know what? They love me that much, I got to let them back. So then I finally committed. So it was cool. Crazy process, honestly.
You know, again, back to him, and this is totally to his credit. He is a very good player in high school, but by the standards of a lot of NBA players, I mean, he was unheralded mm-hmm. and probably not rated where you deserve to be rated. Again, yeah. I think that's where that chip yeah. starts to develop because definitely. It's like, wait a second. You know, I'm 6'7" and I could play the point. Mm-hmm. I got long arms. By the way, I'm a year young for my class, which right. was your case, right? Mm-hmm. And
And I have the ability to defend positions and do things that, like, not a lot of guys can, yet I'm not getting these ratings, right, you know? And I think as a coach, that's one thing you always have to guard against, that you can't follow that. If we would have followed that in Daylen's particular case, it would have been easy for us to justify, maybe we don't recruit him. But we truly recruited him for who he was, both on and off the court, and I think what we saw him becoming. And as much as I saw him becoming a terrific player, it happened in 2 years. That's a true credit to him, because his will and his competitive spirit, in my mind, are unmatched.
We talked about TJ McConnell, and you talk about going back and forth with you guys in that game.
Yeah.
Coach, I want to start with you. Mm-hmm. What do you remember about TJ and JP playing against each other?
I'm glad we had TJ, first of all, because JP, as he explained, you know, you're going to, if you're him, you try to target somebody on the other team to get under their skin. In TJ's case, JP would be able to get under his skin, but TJ's also well-equipped and talented in that same area. Yeah. So you kind of have a clash of two titans. To me, that would do nothing but put him in a position to be at his best, you know? What you worry about is what JP described, and that is the same conversation happens during a game, and it steals the other guy's mind, and next thing you know, it works against your team if you're the visitor. So, but I wasn't worried about it. It was a while back. I know both of them kind of had their little tit for tat, but the one thing is I made sure that TJ was aware before the game started, a couple things, that Coach Mack didn't think he was a good player, and didn't think he was good enough to play for Arizona, which I made sure he understood that message. And then the second message, hey, they got this guy, he's a freshman. And when he comes in the game, he talks. Like, you got to be alert and ready to go, and he's talented with his hand. Like, he can deflect and steal, and he's got a little bit of you in him. Just make sure you're aware and have your teammates aware of this guy. Like, don't underestimate him. Because back then, JP wasn't the JP of his senior year. He would have been first-year player.
Yeah, completely wild as a freshman.
What do you remember about that playing against TJ?
I mean, he's a super talented player. Kind of got those guys rolling in the right direction since he was there. But just vividly remember the moment when I for sure started it. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Like, I don't remember what I said because it's a lot. But just before a timeout, he came up to me and said, I'm the white guy around here. And you know, I was just in the tournament. I was a freshman. And I was like, at that point, I was like, I didn't say anything immediately because I was like, damn, you are the white guy around here. Like, I'm not going to lie, but all right. Walked away. And then after the timeout, he came back and said he apologized. And that means he's a great guy. Apologized and said, I'm sorry. And I was like, no problem. And then I think I just took a different direction, found a different player to talk to.
Yeah.
I don't think I played a ton, but I definitely targeted somebody else.
That familiarity that you have also comes the direction with me. Do you have any questions that you could ask me? I mean, this is the Sean Miller podcast. So I kind of run the show. If I don't like it, we'll edit it out.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
or something that you think that you've become aware of that you didn't know. It could be an idiosyncrasy. You know, but we talked about with Pax, the green pen. You know, nobody knows that, why a green pen? What does that mean? It's just something that kind of gets us from one day to the next. What would you say stand out about me, or different things you didn't realize, or habits? And maybe you can make me better by bringing a couple things up.
I mean, I'd say I probably have two. So I'll ask the first one. It's kind of funny. And I think you'll think it's funny as well. What and when did the Mike and Ike's, Swedish Fish, and Hot Tamales start? The good stuff.
Right. So the good stuff is something that started probably, God, maybe more than 20 years ago. And it's nerves. And it's when you watch film as a coach, you know, sometimes you can almost put yourself to sleep. So, you know, some coaches may drink alcohol. Some coaches may eat chips. I just feel like some coaches, like, you have to do something, because it just 30 minutes become an hour, an hour becomes 2 hours, and 2 hours becomes 4 hours. And And guess what? The next day doesn't represent much different. So for about 4 month period of time, you're watching film in different settings. But where it gets me is especially on the road, because like you don't have a whole lot going on. A lot of times you're in your room, you're watching film, you're nervous for the game. So I started to say, you know, I like candy, Mike and Ike's. That was kind of my go-to. And then hot tamales is a version of Mike and Ike's. Then you mix the Swedish fish in, and you know, that's called like a spicy, you know, spicy tuna.
Yeah.
You know, like when you think of spicy tuna on the sushi deal.
Yeah, okay.
That would be a Swedish fish wrapped around a hot tamale.
Okay.
But I can go to work. Back in the day when I was younger, as you guys know, I mean, I could clear a number of boxes. Certainly not healthy, not good for me, not good at any level. Probably better than some other alternatives. But, you know, a couple of hours go by quickly. And, yeah, the good stuff, which the managers, I think managers at Arizona, managers, you guys all know what that means.
Oh, yeah.
But I have really improved the quality, the quantity that I intake on that. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's something that I've noticed like over the past year. It's honestly been impressive for me. It's like, you know, last year, maybe like during the season, maybe towards the end of the year, it was like, you know, a couple boxes of the good stuff. We're going after meal and then after film later that night. And now it's like, you know, maybe he'll grab one box of hot tamales right. later at
calms
night.
My nerves.
Yeah.
It's probably weird, but yeah, that's my stuff.
Yeah.
No, but you guys have Swedish fish, hot tamales, and Mike and Ike stacked. And I think I've even directed you to kind of keep it away from me, trying to be better.
Definitely. I definitely remember a couple of points. So that's the one thing.
So we're gonna tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's been a long time since this story was told. Going to bring it back. So Coach Mata leaves. I'm fortunate to be named the new head coach. Certainly I knew all of you guys. You knew me as an assistant coach. In your case, you knew me because I recruited you in addition to being your assistant coach. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to continue this journey on the heels of an Elite Eight with a brand new team. And we had a good young recruiting class, which became, again, a fixture of the future. Stanley Burrell, Josh Duncan. Right? Those mm-hmm. two in particular. So when we recruited Josh Duncan, Josh had a thing that he just was, it was spiritual. It was at that level where he wanted to have a certain number, jersey number. And he was a junior, senior at Moeller High School. And, you know, we recruited him very hard. We were thrilled to get him. I know he's a friend, he mm-hmm. was a great teammate, he's an awesome guy.
Yeah, great guy. We ended up playing each other against each other overseas.
Over in Europe.
When he was in France. But yeah, great dude.
Yeah, and became a great player for us. So he was coming in, we're super excited about it. And, you know, in my case, you know, Coach Mata was the head coach, I'm the assistant coach, and I wanted to make sure he was still coming to Xavier, and he was, and we were all set. But Coach Mata had a deal with him, and that deal was, hey, if the number means that much to you, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really all he wanted. He, you know, he wanted that number and fine and great. I'm coming to Xavier. Well, when he left, you know, the question popped up again. Hey, coach, I just want to make sure that you know, the number still stood. And I said, you know, you refresh me on what you're talking about. You know, well, no, Coach Mata told me that I could have a certain jersey number. That number would have been
15.
So I thought about it a second. I said, I think that's Justin Dolman's number. And he kind of looked at me and said, it is. I said, well, I'll work it out. So this is what I did. Thought about it.
I remember that day.
Think about it. I mean, that says a lot, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
You're an old man now. So
I remember that day. You're like, hey, Justin, can you come up to the office? I'm like,
right here. Yeah.
Yep. This office. Well, that's weird. Like, this, what's happening?
Shut the door, walked in. Tell me if I went like this.
You're like, hey, sit down. Then go ahead.
I'm going to cut right to it, Justin. Coach Mata had told Justin or Josh Duncan that he's going to get a certain number. And Josh said all he could get is a yes, no. The answer was yes. And that number happens to be 15. And before you say anything, Justin, you have three choices. No problem, coach. There's another number. I'd be more than happy to. I might have even really pushed you that way.
Oh, you were getting, another number that could
be
bit.
Good or work. I'm going to be a sophomore that's going to take on a new persona. Not a big deal to me. Sure. Mm-hmm. Love to have Josh as a teammate. You could say that. Yes. Mm-hmm. You could say, I need a little bit more time to think about it. I certainly respect that. You don't have to give me an answer yes, no right now. Take all the time in the world. Or absolutely not. But you reserve the right as a player who's already been here, who wore that jersey number, because I'm assuming no one cleared this with you. Is that right? You said, no. I said, okay. I said, do you have an answer? He said, yeah, number three, absolutely no.
Yeah, I'll take the latter. Not freaking happening.
I remember thinking like, damn, it's harder to be a head coach.
That was early, yeah.
So we'll just stop right there. Josh, being the great person he is, ended up taking, I think, number one, wore mm-hmm. his whole career, made mm-hmm. it a great number. You kept 15, but I'll never forget. I think I told my wife, like, boy, you're not going to believe this mess I had today. And again, back then it was like, man, this is a major mess. It's really not, but look, when you're dealing with these guys on things like their number, jersey number means a lot to them. And when they feel like they're double crossed, sometimes you can really lose great trust. So I'll never forget it. Three choices. You could say yes, and I pointed them that direction. You could say more time. Three's no. What do you think, Justin? Three, no, absolutely not. You know, there's a stat that I think is a trademark of any really good point guard. Me and you've talked about this through the months, and that is assist turnover ratio. Some guys have high assists, but they have high turnovers. And as we know, at the highest level of college basketball, turnover can change the game. Right now, you lead the Big East Conference in assist to turnover ratio. You're one of the top five assist guys in the league. What's interesting is when we looked at your stats at Western Kentucky and we watched you play, it was one of the things that I wanted to make sure that it helped you get better at. And that you could say, when I went to Xavier, I improved in the assist to turnover ratio, because you had a lot more turnovers at Western. And I don't know if you had any more assists either. I think you have more assists now and less turnovers. And it's dramatic, actually, when you look at the difference. If you're talking to a young point guard, everybody wants to be a point guard, and you would give them advice on how to improve your assist to turnover ratio, what are the things that you feel like you've concentrated on that maybe we introduced you to that's on your mind in games, all those things that add up towards allowing you to be that in a game?
I start off one, turnovers is like a big momentum change in games. Especially being a point guard, you're going to have the ball in your hands a lot. So that's for one. And I feel like two is just make the simple play. I feel like at Western, sometimes I got baited into, trying to make the big plays and, trying to get the crowd into it, to where you just make a simple play, it'll have the same reaction. So, just make simple plays and, try not to do too much at times and, play off 2 feet. That's a big one, too, playing off 2 feet.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Jump stop, right?
Yeah, playing off 2 feet.
Sometimes when you say the word jump stop as a coach, a young player can, roll their eyes. Yeah. Like, what is this? I'm trying to get better at inside out, crossover, and step back threes, right? But the power of jump stopping, landing on 2 feet, playing off 2 feet, and I think Jay Wright, the former coach at Villanova, watching guards. I coached Jalen Brunson. Mm. And I think I told you this story. In the under-18 Team USA, and was with him in tryouts, was with him in practices, and then coached him in Crete, Greece. And that was before he went to Villanova, and clearly they made him even better at that. But he always had a way of playing off 2 feet. I think physically you remind me a lot of Jalen, because you guys are both big and strong.
Right.
Not real tall, but sturdy. And I just think jump stopping and playing off 2 feet, you can play even faster.
Yeah.
And sometimes that simple play you're talking about, you can't see it if you leave your feet or play off one leg.
Yeah.
Where you make the simple play is you've landed on two.
Two, yeah.
And but talk about the jump stop.
Just playing off 2 feet, you can, say you're going in the lane and you got somebody on your hip. When you jump off one, I feel like there's only one option you can do is either shoot it or try to get a pass off. So, like, jump stopping and playing off two, you got a lot more options. You still got your pivot. You can still go up and score, and it's an easier pass to make.
I hope when you leave here, the one thing if someone asked you about me as a coach, you'd say one thing Coach Miller emphasized is play off 2 feet, jump stop. Because sometimes I think you're one of the fastest players in college basketball. I believe that, especially with the ball in your hands. But you still have the ability to go that fast and land on two.
Right.
And some of your best plays, our best plays this year, have happened when you're pushing it at breakneck speed, and yet you land on 2 feet and you make a good shot, good play, right, or get fouled. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
Good. How about the pace? Sometimes when people think about a guard playing faster, they think more turnovers. How about if I said this to you? I think if you play with more force and pace, you turn the ball over less, not more. Does that make sense to you?
It didn't, but it does now. You know, when I first got here, I didn't, you know, the way we was playing, I was, you know, all in my head thinking, you know, turnovers was it's going to happen more because I'm playing faster than I've ever played before. But it actually is the opposite. I don't know how, but I feel like me playing, you know, yeah, the fastest I play now is just I take care of the ball and I care about taking care of the ball a lot more.
So a great thing is, like, we just played Butler and it was a tough loss for us, but I always keep track. And the stat sheet now keeps this. You realize how many times you get fouled. Mm. And I would say the majority of times you're getting fouled are happening in transition. So even in that game, I think you ended up getting fouled 7 times. 4 of the 7 happened when you were pushing the ball at breakneck speed. So when you think about that, that allows us to get in the bonus. That allows you to get to the free throw line. And I agree. I think playing off 2 feet and playing fast with purpose,
right,
for, yeah, a point guard, it arms you with some more tools in your toolbox that expands your game, not take away from your,
for
game,
sure,
you know. And you know, Coach, one of the reasons we're doing this podcast is what you just talked about. And I think I have a very unique experience with Xavier because I was here as an assistant. I was here as a head coach. I left for a 13-year window, watched a lot of success, watched the transition from the Atlantic 10 to the Big East, followed it closely. And now here I am. I came back at a later time when we're in the Big East, completely, completely new in different world. But when you talk about the tradition, one of the things that drove me to do this podcast is it's that word respect. And like, I'll give you a great example. Since the NCAA tournament has gone to 64 teams, which Adam and Paul, you can help me with the date. I think that's the mid-80s.
Mid-1985.
So we're going all the way back to 1985, a long time ago. We have the 11th most wins in college basketball during that period of time from 1985 through the beginning of 2023. 11th. If we started to talk about the 10 teams ahead of us, I mean, it's, you know, you can name them just like I can, right? But think about that. When you're talking about building something, you're just not talking about building something that's had a little bit of success. You're talking about something that's had, I mean, an insurmountable amount of success and wins over decades in different conferences and coaches. And I think it's up to us, the people that are here right now, to continue to bring that to life, because I believe our tradition is very understated. And I think that's part of what I'm trying to do, you know, moving forward, of maybe helping more players get their number retired, to honoring former coaches and teams and players that have really built what we call our brand today. Because look, it's one of the best and elite programs in the country. It really is.
There is no question. And I am so proud of that, and so proud of you, Sean, and the other people before you that have taken this and moved it to another level to have the success that you're talking about. That is amazing to me. But that's what I thought there was a chance to have happen moving forward, because it was just, you know, there was a commitment, there was an enthusiasm, and the things that have transpired since have just been great. I feel a great sense of pride. And I know I talk to a lot of people, and they know that I was there back in the day, and they have great respect for the Xavier program. And yeah, it's something that, you know, we all can be proud of and be, yeah, happy that you're a part of it now. And And hopefully that will continue for years. I wish the hell that I had the opportunity to come back like you did.
Yeah.
I never should have left. But, you know, it's just really gratifying to know that that's where the program is right now.
Coach, I just want to say, and Adam talked about it to start the show, and I just want to say myself, to come from the first episode of this show where we were trying to figure out everything that we wanted to talk about and set the stage back there in October to where we are now to end the season, I just want to personally thank you for staying so consistent with this. We've had a great time this year. I've had a ton of fun. It's been very fulfilling for me, and I look forward to doing this down the line with you and everybody else here in the future. So
I'm saying, I mean, you guys make it easy. Love talking to you. And, you know, your passion for Xavier basketball is something that motivates me. I know how much you guys love it and you put the time in. You also know our program because you're here during practices and in shoot-arounds and after games and before games. So the knowledge base you have about the happenings and what goes on, I think also really adds to the podcast. But my biggest reason for doing it is to be able to connect with so many different people in a unique way that oftentimes you overlook as a coach because you're worried about the next practice and the next season. And I'm more guilty of that than anything. But to be able to talk to Kenny Freeze and to be able to bring to light even some guests we haven't had on yet, I'm really continuing to look forward to connecting with them.
Yeah. I think the off season, you know, we may not have an episode every week going in here to the off season. We'll establish a schedule and all that going forward. But I think there's a world here in the off season where maybe the show even gets better because we're able to, it's a little easier to schedule. We're able to bring some guests on, other coaches or people that we couldn't have on during the season because schedules conflicted and people that we tried to have or whatever. So
stay tuned.
Stay tuned. There will be plenty more here throughout the off season. It's not ending just because the season ended, but you'll hear more about that as the weeks go on. So thank you all for watching the show all season. Make sure you follow along at Sean Miller Pod on social media. You subscribe on YouTube. Follow us on all the social media platforms. Thank you to our presenting sponsor, Deer Park Roofing. They've been great all year with the show. The official payroll sponsor of the Sean Miller Podcast, payroll partners, and of course, TGE Solar as well. Thank you to everybody who watched the show, who made it great this year, and we'll see you very soon on the Sean Miller Podcast.
Thank you.
This has been the Sean Miller Podcast, presented by Deer Park Roofing, with your hosts, Paul Fritschner and Adam Bau. Join us again soon for another episode with the head coach of the Xavier Musketeers, Sean Miller.